From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The announcements just keep coming. New, old TV shows headed our way, revived, rebooted. The X-Files, Twin Peaks, Gilmore Girls, now Star Trek, and more. We've already seen The Return of the Muppets, Heroes, Arrested Development, The Odd Couple, Dallas, and many more, bringing us back to the glory days of favorite shows or making us wish it had all just ended years ago and stayed ended. What's up next? This hour on Point, Star Trek again and the art and business of revivals, reboots. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you make of all the revivals, the reboots, and how would you rewrite Star Trek this time? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Margaret Lyons, TV columnist at Vulture. Margaret, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And from Newark, New Jersey, Alan Sepinwall is with us, TV critic for Hit Fix, author of The Revolution Was Televised. Alan, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me again, Tom.
Margaret, can you just update us on the Star Trek announcement and the batch that it is kind of a big part of here? When's Star Trek coming? What's the deal with it? It's kind of on TV, but not really.
So it's going to live on CBS's streaming services, which is sort of a push to popularize a venue that's not Netflix and it's not Hulu, and it's sort of CBS's own entry into that world. But we'll see.
So 2017, they're going to premiere on television and then say, if you want to see the rest of Star Trek, dear Star Trek fans, pay something, something a month and go to CBS streaming?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, so it's a come hither. And what about the rest of the arena out there? That's 2017, and not alone then, Twin Peaks then, Gilmore Girls, X-Files, what's coming when?
X-Files, I think, is the soonest. Gilmore Girls is sort of more off in the distance, and I feel like Twin Peaks keeps getting pushed further and further back on the schedule. So I think especially for Twin Peaks, it's going to be one of those things where you'll have it when you have it.
Now, I know Alan is not a fan of all this comeback, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much that's come back. You're not necessarily against revival, Margaret. How do you look at this trend?
Like I look at anything else, which is if it's good, it's good, and I am excited for good television in all formats and all structures. Many reboots and many revivals are not good. And that's obviously, you know, at a certain point, there's a pattern and you have to expect that things will sort of fit that pattern. But for a show like Gilmore Girls, which is a show that I adore and miss and think about still, the idea that there could be another good episode of Gilmore Girls just fills me with hope and joy and delight. I want that so much.
Bring it back. You're in the number that they're gunning for. X-Files supposed to be back in January. Of course, it was on Fox from 93 to 2002. The new series will premiere January 24th. Here's the trailer for the upcoming Fox revival of The X-Files. Of course, Gillian Anderson as FBI Special Agent Dana Scully and David Duchovny as Fox Mulder.
We must ask ourselves, are we truly alone? Or are we being lied to?
The government's been hiding alien technology.
We've never been in more danger.
This is my life. This is everything I believe in.
You are on dangerous ground here.
You two have experience with these spooky cases.
This is dangerous.
When has that ever stopped us?
Boom, boom, boom. Must be a trailer. Alan Sepinwall, Duchovny there, and Anderson on their way back. You're not a fan of the revivals. I'm sure you understand why they happen. Can't they be all right, Alan? Can't they be good? Or is there something innately wrong about it?
I mean, there can be, and I absolutely understand why they happen, which is it's a cluttered marketplace. There's going to be over 400 scripted shows in primetime TV this year alone. One way in which you try to get attention in this crowded field is with a brand name that people know and that people love. The problem is, like, TV is almost alchemy, and you look at what made those shows work back in the day. You know, even by the end of The X-Files, X-Files had largely fallen apart. Arrested Development, the third season, wasn't as good as the first two. Gilmore Girls, the last couple of seasons, were not that awesome. So now you're coming back 5-10 years more later and trying to recapture all of the things that were working so perfectly back then. And it's very hard to do. I think about that Arrested Development season on Netflix, and it bums me out because it was just it showed you how the trick worked in a way, and it made me less inclined to want to go back and revisit some of the earlier episodes.
What are the elements of TV alchemy? I mean, part of it is time related, right? TV is picking up on what's going on in the culture. What else is in there that make it hard to capture that will-o'-the-wisp thing that made things really good at one time?
Well, okay, just to use Gilmore Girls for an example, that's a show that when it debuted, it was about a 32-year-old mother with a 16-year-old daughter. And the idea was they were very close in age, and the mother often acted like a teenager and the daughter often acted like an adult, and mm-hmm. they behaved more like sisters than mother and daughter. And the age gap is going to be the same now, but the Alexis Bledel character, Rory, is going to be an adult, and that's going to fundamentally change the relationship. And it could be interesting. It could work. You know, like Margaret, if there's another great Gilmore Girls episode, I'm going to be giddy, but I'm sort of not expecting it.
Here it was, ran from 2000 to 2007. Of course, the mother and the daughter in this scene from the show's second season, aired in 2001. The two go back and forth about what to have for dinner. And this, as Alan says, is a 16-year-old and a 32-year-old.
So, what about dinner?
It should probably be something healthy since we've been eating junk the whole trip.
We had lettuce on our burgers last night.
We picked it off.
But it left its essence.
There's lettuce essence on our burgers?
Definitely.
And that satisfied our vegetable requirement?
For the week.
We can't argue with cold hard facts.
Lettuce essence on our burgers. Margaret, roll that whole thing forward all these years, and you don't have that dynamic of adult and teen.
It's true you don't have the dynamic of adult and teen, but, you know, people are still each other's parents and children, even in adulthood. And there is an essential part of Gilmore Girls that is the mom, Lorelai's relationship with her own parents, Richard and Emily. So, you know, and she was an adult on the show, and that sort of relationship of adult parents and children was part of the original mix. So moving forward, you know, I think that Emily, Lorelai, Rory triangle still is very important. Unfortunately, the actor who played the grandfather, Richard, has died since the show went off the air. So, you know, it will be very sad not to have Grandpa Gilmore in the mix. But, you know, I think it's interesting to think about what Rory and Lorelai's relationship would look like in adulthood. I'm curious about it. It won't be the same, but that's how all relationships are. No relationship is the same forever.
So what's your hunger when it comes to Gilmore Girls? Is it to see Lauren Graham and Alexis Bledel again, or is it to see their characters again, how they want to play the characters now? Is it the actors or the fiction, or you tell us?
I think it's the same thing of, you know, wanting to hear your favorite band continue to make music. There's a whole set of things that go into it, right? I'm curious about the characters. I think it's a show that had such a unique voice and style and pace and identity. Mm-hmm. And there aren't other shows other than sort of Bunheads, which is Amy Sherman Palladino's follow-up, which was similar in a lot of ways to Gilmore Girls, including some cast crossover and sort of similar dialogue aesthetics, I guess I would say. You know, there's not another show that's exactly like Gilmore Girls, and that's one of the things that made it great when it first came out, and one of the things that sort of leaves a Gilmore Girls-shaped hole in your heart, because there's no way to fit – there's no other show that's sort of doing exactly what that show did. And thinking about how fun it would be to hear those voices again and be back in that town meeting again and you know, feeling like you could go home again. I don't know. I mean, I agree with Alan. Like, I'm trying to sort of be careful and cautious and not talk myself into something that's going to result in heartbreak. But I also want to keep this little candle burning. You know, this is the hope, right? Especially because it's a show whose creators were not part of the final season. Where you feel like the sort of ending that you got was not maybe the ending that the show was destined to have. And this is a way to kind of correct fate.
Alan, come on, unharden your heart. We've got heartbreak and candles burning here. And I mean, the band's getting back together, Alan. Does that not move you?
It moves me to a degree. And look, you played the Star Trek theme song at the opening of the segment, yeah. And my heart kind of leapt at that. So, you know, I can be as cynical and guarded as anybody when it comes to this. But, you know, every time they release a new bit of X-Files footage or every time I hear a new Twin Peaks casting announcement, I get excited, even though my brain is telling me it's not going to be as good.
But you don't know. Here's season 3, Star Trek Next Generation, Picard, played by Patrick Stewart.
Attention, all hands. As you know, we could outrun the Klingon vessels, but we must protect the Enterprise C until she enters the temporal rift. And we must succeed. Let's make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise. Picard out.
Picard out, and Temple Rift in the music, and whatever's beeping in the background. I mean, I know there have been a million Star Trek Returns, Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise and all the rest. Margaret, is the audience still out there? Do they have to pull on an audience from the original or from even Deep Space Nine? Or, I mean, the last one didn't end until 2005, so it's not that long ago.
And there were very popular movies. I think the global appetite for Star Trek has not been sated. I think people still do want more Star Trek. And I do think it's a show where it's a franchise that's sort of designed for at any time we get the Star Trek we deserve. You know, there's always going to be room in the landscape for some iteration of Star Trek.
I mean, so there's a cultural moment that can be there. Alan, maybe this is like, I don't know, Gilgamesh or the Ramayana. I mean, maybe these are our new cultural sagas that we should feel free to add to and bring back anytime we like. Always meaningful.
No, absolutely. And it's just like, you know, how we keep getting all these different comic book adaptations. This is our modern mythology. And if they can get a good creative team around this new Star Trek show, I'm going to be excited. And maybe I will even consider subscribing to CBS's digital service for it.
We'll look at the business behind this, the cultural impulse behind it. We're talking about revivals and reboots and TV Star Trek coming back. Of course, behind us here, Carole King re-recorded as a theme song for the Gilmore Girls. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Star Trek headed back again to the small screen and television's new round of reboots, revivals, and show comebacks, from X-Files to Gilmore Girls to Twin Peaks, Fuller House, and, well, all the rest. There have been so many, and there are a lot more to come. Alan Sepinwall is with us from HitFix, TV critic there, author of The Revolution Was Televised. Margaret Lyons is here from Vulture, TV columnist there, joining us from New York. You can join us as well. What do you think? When comebacks succeed, how do they do it? And when they fail, why? What revival thrilled you? What disappointed you? Are you already savoring Star Trek's return? Are you up for Twin Peaks' return, for Gilmore Girls and the rest? Is all this inevitable when the TV and streaming landscape is so fragmented and shows need fans? This will get your blood going. A clip from the final episode of Star Trek Enterprise. That was the last one before this next upcoming. Ran until 2005. Here's the voice of Patrick Stewart as Captain Picard, William Shatner as Captain Kirk, and Enterprise's Captain Archer.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations,
to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Of course, it's not always so grand. First episode of the new reboot of The Odd Couple, February this year. Oscar and Felix, Matthew Perry, Thomas Lennon move back in with each other after marriages fail. Here, Oscar walks in on Felix doing yoga.
Wow, that's a lot of Lycra. Not enough, but a lot.
Just doing my daily yoga. I find it really centers me. Otherwise, I would be an uptight basket case. Care to join me?
No, I'm going out for a run.
Really?
Well, a beer run.
Well, that's a lot of Lycra. Chris in Spokane, Washington. Thank you for calling, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call today.
Yeah.
I've been a lifelong Star Trek fan. And sorry, that's frog in my throat. But
that's just love for Star Trek we hear there, Chris. We understand.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm concerned that the motivation for Star Trek might be a little skewed now these days, because Star Trek had some pretty lofty goals, and they had a national audience. When a black person kissed a white person, no one had ever seen that on TV before.
Yep. But
now you can see pretty much anything, anywhere, anytime. So I'm wondering how they're going to tailor that to, you know. Also, I'm concerned that I don't know that they're going to. Actually, I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Yes, it had, in Gene Roddenberry days, it, of course, had a big kind of cultural goals, and Roddenberry was very upfront about that, and people saw it right there on the screen. We're going to talk in just a moment with Larry Nemechek, who's all over the Star Trek's past, present, and future. But, Margaret, to you first, what do we know at this point about who's going to produce it, what it might look like, what's come out?
Not that much. I think we're still in the very early stages of imagining what a new Star Trek will look like. And while I understand and appreciate Star Trek's history as a progressive show, I actually would disagree that there's a full – you can get anything at any time on television. I think TV still is overwhelmingly very white, very straight, very able-bodied. There are plenty of kinds of people who are not represented well or at all on television, and Star Trek would be a terrific venue to continue to bring ideas, identities, aspects of our life that are not reflected on television into a realm that does reflect and tell stories about, you know, different kinds of people in different kinds of ways. I do think there's plenty of ground left to cover in terms of television reflecting society, so which I don't think it currently does.
Break out the Star Trek flag. Alex Kurtzman will be the executive producer. Alan Sepinwall, of course, he did Alias and Fringe, Sleepy Hollow, Xena, Warrior Princess, but also, what, the Star Trek movie in 2009 and Star Trek Into Darkness 2013. Does Kurtzman being at the helm tell you something about what's coming?
Not necessarily, because he's going to be the producer but not the head writer. They say they're still looking for that again. It really sounds like at this point it's more of a business deal than a creative deal, because they want to use this to try to sell subscriptions to CBS All Access, and they'll figure out what the show is later, which is concerning in and of itself. But I imagine there's a lot of talented writers in Hollywood who can come in with a Star Trek pitch. I do think the show lends itself much more to being on TV than in movies. I like the J.J. Abrams movies, and I liked a lot of the other movies, but Star Trek is about, you know, the voyage, visiting the different planets each week, you know, having a different encounter with a new culture. And in the movies, it's much more action spectacle, and which can be fun, but isn't really ideally what Star Trek is. So if they can make a good show, that would be great. But nobody really knows what it's going to be yet.
We'll go deeper on Star Trek. Billy in Oklahoma City. Thanks for calling, Billy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to comment on on how these rehashes are kind of, I guess what I want to say is, 20 years from now, are we still going to be doing remakes of what we used to be? Like, are we out of fresh ideas, I guess, is the idea I want to pose.
Is that what it comes right down to? I mean, Margaret, we talk revival and reboot, and Billy goes straight to rehash. So you see where he's coming from. I mean, why not have something that's all new every time out of the blocks? Wouldn't that be the sign of healthy, creative, you know, at grips with what's happening right now, studios?
There's a ton of that. I think the idea that TV now is somehow only rehashes is overstating it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of them, and they do exist. But there are still new, interesting, creative, wonderful, fascinating, original, unique shows that come out. And they come out year-round now, which is something that didn't used to happen. They come out rarely on networks, but still once in a while. They come out on cable. They come out on streaming services. They come out online only. You know, there's not a shortage of excellent television. There's actually more excellent television basically every hour of every day than there has ever been before. So I think the idea that we have a lot of lousy rehashes is true, but I don't know that they're necessarily crowding other things out, because we have lots of really lousy new shows too. Like, it's hard to be good. It's hard to make excellent things. We have lots of really great books and a million times more terrible books. The same is true for any kind of creative output, that there's a ton of it and only some of it is really good. And so we have a lot more television, which means we have a lot more bad television too, but we also do still have a lot more good television than ever.
Now, it's interesting. It's not only the blockbusters that come back. I mean, way, way back in its day, Dallas was huge. I mean, The Odd Couple was pretty big. 90210 was big. But the thing we've also seen here is these kind of cult shows. I mean, at its very height, I'm reading here, Gilmore Girls, at its peak in 2002, the series ranked 121st in U.S. viewership. What's the business circumstance today, Alan, that makes something that was never bigger than that attractive to bring back?
because a show like that is more beloved by its audience than a show that was, say, 50th in broadcast audience at the time was. You know, if you were to pick out, say, you know, JAG, do a JAG revival, there would be more people who watched JAG originally, but far fewer of them would say, oh gosh, I have to subscribe to Netflix to see New Adventures of JAG, whereas the Gilmore Girls fans, there weren't a lot of them, but like the Trekkies back in the day, they love that show and will pay money to see more of it.
And this goes, I mean, it's sort of mind-blowing, but you, as you remind us, 400 scripted TV shows coming out this year. When things are that fragmented, if you can grab onto any devoted followership, even if it's not massive, it's a big deal.
Exactly right. You brand names help. You're trying to, you know, Margaret talked about all these great new shows out there, and there's a lot of them, and it's just hard to get attention for any of them. All of the audiences are so much smaller than they used to be, so every little bit helps. And if you can remind somebody of something they liked when they were a teenager, when they were a young adult, even when they were a kid, you know, that gives you a leg up on a wholly new concept, even if the wholly new concept is a better show.
Let's go to Dylan, calling from Kenosha, Wisconsin. Hi, Dylan. You're on the air.
Hi, how's it going? I was just calling basically because your guest on the show said he didn't like the third season of Arrested Development, and I thought it was great. I've seen the episodes over and over, and I've watched season one, two, three consecutively over. I was just curious if he possibly knew when the fourth season was going to be rebooted.
Okay, we've got reboots, and we've got Arrested Development going way back. I have laughed my keister off at that show with my kids. How about it? You hear the defense there, Alan?
No, the third season of Arrested Development, which was the last one on Fox, is certainly a lot better than the Netflix season. It's just not, I think, as good as the first two. A number of the show's original writers left by that point. They were straining a little more. There's this long arc with Charlize Theron as a woman who's developmentally disabled, who you don't find out is developmentally disabled until one of her last episodes. And so the joke only makes sense once you know that. So it plays better in repeats than it did originally. The Netflix season was just problematic because the actors were never available at the same time, and so you were just doing these single character spotlights on a show that was all about people interacting. And you know, we don't know when there will be a fifth season. They keep talking about it, but there's no definitive date yet, and it may not happen or it might.
Twin Peaks, you were not so excited, but David Lynch, who was of course there for the original, I guess is back on now to direct this. So are you now in anticipatory mode, Alan?
That one I am, just because that is one of the most insane shows to ever, even for a couple of months, be a hit in American television. And if David Lynch and Mark Frost, who co-created the show with him, can bring any of that back from that first season, that would be marvelous. But even if it's terrible, it's going to be interestingly terrible, as like Lynch's creative failures are. So I'm looking forward to it, even though pretty much all of the second season of Twin Peaks was a disaster.
I definitely swooned for it, though, back in the day when it got rolling. It was so weird and wonderful. Here's a little bit from the first episode, aired in 1990. Bobby Briggs, played by Dana, wait for it, Ashbrook, is questioned in relation to the murder.
I told you. I got up early like I always do. I went running like I always do. I went for some breakfast at the Double R, and I didn't go to practice because I didn't feel like it.
Okay, and back it comes, Margaret. Will you be waiting at the ready for Twin Peaks?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I think is interesting about the shows you mentioned, like Dallas and 90210, and why the revivals of those shows seemed less compelling, is that we have a lot of other shows that sort of do what those shows did. But for Twin Peaks, there's only Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks is the only show to ever really Twin Peaks. And we have other murder mystery shows, and we have other weird small town shows, but nothing has ever had that same kind of scope and style and strangeness and sort of that magic that is, that keeps Twin Peaks as part of the conversation so long after it aired. I think, you know, for a show like 90210, which is a show that I, you know, loved growing up, and I've seen every episode of that show dozens of times probably, but there's a lot of shows that sort of do what 90210 does. And so I think that in terms of filling a specific role, whether it's in culture or just in your own kind of taste profile or whatever it is, the sort of more distinctive, unusual, and special the show, the more compelling it is to think about a revival or return to it. So for something like Twin Peaks, which is extraordinarily its own, the idea of being able to go back to it and have more of it is very compelling.
I cannot wait to see what David Lynch does with it in 2016, 2017. That'll be fascinating. We've got so many Star Trek callers here. We better get some more Star Trek expertise on the air. Larry Nemechek joins us right now from Burbank, California. Author, actor, editor, archivist, consultant, interviewer, producer. Author of the official Star Trek, The Next Generation Companion and Star Trek Stellar Cartography. He's a blogger and vlogger at TrekLandBlog.com. Larry, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom, for having me. It's been a huge week for Star Trek.
So have the Star Trek minions out there figured out what they want or what's coming? Do you have any insight for us?
Well, it's been an interesting week like that. Yeah, your discussion about reboots has been interesting. Of course, for one thing, Star Trek's been through this before.
Many times.
We've come through. This is the 50th anniversary coming up next year of the original series. And the moment I heard this news, which for 10 years since the end of Enterprise that you talked about there, we've been talking about what the comeback would be, because part of the DNA of Star Trek, we all know about the show, we've been talking about that. I talk about the four C's of Star Trek, the concept, the casting, the characters, and the canon. And I think any reboot would have to have those.
The canon meaning the sort of the fundamental elements of the first show or something else?
Well, the magic thing about it, two or three magical points about Star Trek that really set it apart from almost anything else we're talking about here. One of them is the fact that the first revival, the DNA of Star Trek, the fandom, is about the fans have always owned Star Trek, felt that way, that there would have never been a Star Trek motion picture, which started the whole revival comeback if they had left it for dead. And without that first 10 years of activity of fan craziness and the first conventions
their
and clubs
fervor,
and all that.
Their costumes, their
exactly.
Getting together, all the whole thing.
Exactly. And then after the motion picture was huge but didn't do quite the – didn't live up to that. Then the comeback with the Wrath of Khan, and then it was off and kicking. And then in 20 years later, and 20 years ago or 30 years ago, the Next Generation was our first paradigm. We've already been through this whole how would we do a reboot, because they had the genius – Gene Roddenberry and company had the genius reboot of, rather than the controversial recasting of Shatner and Nimoy and D. Kelly – as Kirk, Spock, McCoy, they opened up, so to speak, the Star Trek sandbox to where they said, okay, no, we're going to keep all of that, honor them, even keep doing the movies over here on the side, but now we're going to set another setting 80 years ahead. So basically it was the Star Trek vision and the Roddenberry thing of the hopeful optimistic future and the science gadgetry geekery and the morality tales. And then, good
but
writing
with a new
and good
crew,
characters.
Picard and
right,
all the rest.
Right, right, right. So that kind of set the stage for how Star Trek would keep on. Basically, to me and a lot of people, Star Trek is just more volumes on the shelf. So to talk about a Star Trek reboot, you can go back. That's why a lot of people were disappointed. Some were disappointed with the JJ movies. They'd rather keep creating new rather than going back and recasting and rebooting, although that worked for a lot of people.
But they've already time-shifted once. They could time-shift again. They could be up against a whole new set of challenges. And clearly, we've seen in the past, there can be a very different vibe or mood depending on how it's brought back, Larry.
Well, right. Well, I mean, the beauty, in fact, Gene said this, in his day, was that the beauty of Star Trek is that anybody can come in and, reflect the current society, the social ills that need to be addressed, the current state of technology, the current reflection, because that's what Star Trek is, reflecting on where we are now and looking at the future and then telling some, great stories along the way. And but that commentary part is what's essential. And you touched on it before, the format of movies gets away from that. Star Trek's first destiny really is as a series. And for the last 10 years, that's what fandom's been debating, is the how and the when and the why and how it would come back.
Larry Nemechek, our Star Trek great authority, with us from Burbank, California. Please stand by. Alan Sepinwall at HitFix. Margaret Lyons at Vulture. We're talking about reboots, revivals, of course, Star Trek, The Next Generation behind us right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Star Trek, headed back again to the small screen and television's new round of reboots, revivals, show comebacks from X-Files to Gilmore Girls to Twin Peaks, Fuller House, and all the rest. Margaret Lyons is with us from Vulture out of New York today, TV columnist there. Alan Sepinwall is with us from Newark, New Jersey, TV critic for Hit Fix, author of The Revolution Was Televised. And from Burbank, California, our Star Trek expert Larry Nemechek is here, founder of Portal47.net, a Star Trek fan site, columnist for Star Trek Magazine, author of the official Star Trek, The Next Generation Companion, and much more. With us from California. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Is it inevitable that we have all these revivals and reboots when the TV streaming landscape is so fragmented and shows need fans? What have you thought of other recent revivals lately? Wet Hot American Summer, movie to TV, The Odd Couple, Hawaii 5-0, 24, The Muppets, and Trekkies, connoisseurs, Star Trek fans, how would you cast Star Trek now? What feeling would you give it? What scientific challenges? What moral challenges? Give us your ideal Star Trek treatment circa 2017. That's when it will be back. Of course, people thinking about this, talking about it, David Duchovny coming back as Agent Mulder for the X-Files revival in January, talked with the Huffington Post over the summer about why the time is right to bring the show back.
When the TV landscape changed, and even I could see it, that cable had changed everything, and that people no longer had to make 25 episodes of TV a season. For instance, Aquarius is 13 on network. Then it became apparent to all of us that, well, it's possible we could go back and do a few. We could go back and do a short season.
There are a million ways to do it now between TV and cable and streaming. Old things can be made new. The Muppets, back on ABC, is taken on more of an adult tone in its revival. Here's a little scene where Miss Piggy is in a bad mood because she doesn't have a date to the People's Choice Awards. So Kermit and the gang are trying to figure out one for her. They try Matt Damon, Gerard Butler, Jeff Goldblum.
Goldblum's married! Oh, wait. Happily married? Ah, oh, rats.
Hey, there's a rat sitting right here.
Don't be so sensitive. You guys started the plague.
Okay, guys, throw everything we've got at Keanu Reeves.
Got it. Hey. Oh. Keanu Reeves says he's in.
Oh.
No. Oh, he's put on 100 pounds. He's doing a movie about that Hawaiian ukulele player.
Hey, let's call Josh Groban next. He's single, he's got a great voice, and he gives me the feels.
He gives me the feels, too. What? He's a handsome man and gender is fluid.
The Muppets 2015 and gender is fluid. Welcome to Right Now. Daniel in Detroit, Michigan. Daniel, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I just had a kind of amusing as a result of this conversation that I wanted to share and throw into the mix. With all of the future filmmakers participating in this grand experiment on the internet with remix culture and freely sharing and remixing without without worrying about if it's a reboot or a remix or a rehash or not their content, is this just the tip of the iceberg? Is this kind of going to explode as those people come into age? And
Daniel, elaborate really for us a little bit. Paint the picture of remix culture as you see it. What are you pointing to there?
So I'm talking about things like Creative Commons, where copyright is abandoned and reestablished as licenses that allow remixing, things like that. Memes, for example, where you have people taking something like a guy dancing in the street to techno and making T-shirts out of it, making their own video adaptations out of it. It will, if that might find its way into, big budget movies.
Interesting. You see it maybe coming?
Maybe. I mean, there's a... the show Gotham, which I see as kind of an example of it. They take this kind of Batman canon and ignore it, but take the characters that we have relationships with and put them in an entirely different context with different, just in a different world, basically.
Yeah.
Within that same frame.
Let us pick it up, Daniel. I appreciate your call from Detroit. Alan Sepinwall, maybe we're just getting started here on what's going to go in the blender. I mean, never mind formal reboots and revivals, but... just pick pieces up all over the place, Creative Commons, off we go. People could start mixing, all half dozen Star Trek things together.
But you also have to understand that these are properties owned by large conglomerates who are very guarded about how and when they are used. So one of the reasons that Gotham does things a little bit differently from when we remember is because the show is not allowed to feature an adult Bruce Wayne as Batman. So mm-hmm. they've got to work around that. And that's entirely because that's what DC and Warner Brothers say, because they've got Batman movies and they don't want to interfere with those. So I think these things are great, the memes and the remixes on the internet, and I enjoy a lot of them. But it's still going to come down to these big companies with lots of lawyers and lots of executives and different people giving notes and saying you can do this, you can't do that, more than someone just being able to come in and do whatever they want. And I have a feeling that whoever is brought in to do this new Star Trek show is probably going to be asked to do something in the same continuity as those recent movies and not the TV shows, because the movies are what is around now.
Margaret Lyons, remind us of this distinction that people make between revivals and reboots.
Revival to me is the same cast, ideally, often the same creative side, either the actual creator of the show or people involved in the creation and shaping of the show. The sort of getting the band back together. A reboot would be maybe the same premise, same sort of labels and titles and stuff, but new characters or new cast members playing different characters, a revised setting. I think Battlestar Galactica is a good example of a reboot that's not a revival. It's still Battlestar Galactica.
They can ditch the continuity entirely if they like, sort of even make new backstories.
Yep. New everything except a little bit is sort of the way I think a reboot can say we're going to keep what we want and discard everything else. And a revival has to still be in that canon, in that world, taking the things that have already existed and making sure that they continue to exist in this new space.
But the DNA transfer can be subtle. Heather in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. Heather, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to say I think the Gilmore Girls coming back as a 4-episode series is just phenomenal, because it's almost like a time warp. I was in middle school when it first came out, so I watched it with all my friends. I watched it through college.
Yeah.
And now we've all caught up with it on Netflix. But then, for the movies now, we're actually going to be closer to the age that Lorelai was. When we were watching it on Netflix, we were closer in age to Lorelai, the mom, but mm-hmm. now we're kind of time warped back, and now we're caught up with Rory again, and we're about her age.
Of course, but they're aging too. Heather, I'm really glad you raised. I mean, time becomes so malleable here. It's fascinating. Larry Nemechek, in the old days, really old days, you could only watch it when the networks put it on. Now people of all different ages from different generations can watch it anytime. And as things come back and go away again, it gets all mixed up. The nothing's chronological necessarily here, Larry.
That's right. And one of the things that the older Star Trek fan base has been interesting to watch is that weekly experience of watching whatever era, whatever show you came in with, watching it unfold. Now to the new fans coming in, and there are tons of new fans, and they're not all just due to the JJ movies. The Netflix access, the streaming access, and the attention, the promotional publicity around the remastering of the original series in Next Gen has brought in tons of new fans. And a lot of them are still fans of the Roddenberry vision and the original appeals of all the shows without them being a weekly experience. They're just a wall of titles on the shelf, and that hasn't stopped people. The same thing that I saw happening with foreign fans who weren't getting it is now happening with everybody. And it's been an interesting generational change that way. The reaction this week to this story has been as much about your guests started talking about the business end of things. I expected a little rehash of the controversy with the JJ with the Bad Robot movies in 2009, because the whole point of having it be an alternate universe was controversial in the day. Although now I think it's genius, because that allowed to what we call the Prime Universe, which was the 700 and some odd hours of connectedness, mm-hmm. more or less, to still survive. Because 2005, you had the Viacom, what I call the Viacom divorce. And Paramount, the dad, got the movies to take out on a glory mission, mm-hmm. Got Star Trek, while mom, CBS, kind of sat there as the fan base was frustrated about getting back to a series concept, a series format. Mm-hmm. And now, mom has decided to jump up and do something. We've talked for 10 years about the how and why and what platform and, the evolution. And the first thing that hit this week was, and looking to either, you know, CBS's Showtime as a premium channel or the streamings, Netflix has been the hot thing for 2 or 3 years. And now for that to be out. And the first wave of, you know, the vocal end of fandom has been, you know, opposition to it being behind a paywall, which it was just insane to me. I thought the controversy would be about what Kurtzman would do and whether it would be the JJ movies concept versus, you know, going back to Prime, because rather than Paramount owning this, this is a CBS thing protecting their TV asset of all those hundreds of hours of content. So that is, this is business driven over content, and we're all waiting to see how that plays out. But it's been wild watching the reaction of the fan base.
You never know what you'll see when the cloaking device comes off here. Drew Harwell writing in the Washington Post, he's quoting Don Draper from Mad Men, no less, on nostalgia. Now, with Star Trek, it may not be all nostalgia. We're going to go to Star Trek callers right here. But Don Draper saying nostalgia is delicate but potent and not easy to get it right. Nathan in Austin, Texas. Nathan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My whole thing goes back to the casting deal. What made the second half of The Next Generation and the second half of Deep Space Nine interesting was they started bringing in fresh blood, and the stories were interconnected over multiple episodes. It wasn't one-off episodes like it was for the first 7 seasons, which got boring, for me at least. Personally, I'd like to see something like casting kind of like ER. You've got a core group of officers or whoever, but every week, as it happens in any fleet across Earth or any military or any organization, people come and go. So you can have this interconnectivity between crews and ships trying to solve a problem. You know, no one ship can do it all. And that was always my big issue with the Star Trek universe as far as the episodes, because it only happened to one crew over the course of however long. I know that was the original premise.
But Nathan, they're way out there. They're way out there. But I take your point. You're kind of a pragmatic realist watching this. How can one crew all do that? Some Star Trek fans might say, you've got to believe. Larry, what do we know about casting, if anything, for the 2017 comeback of Star Trek?
Oh, your guests hit it on already. They're not out of the game. I was amazed that they even acknowledged they'd been talking to writers. If they'd had a head writer, they would have announced that, obviously. And one of my questions was exactly what role Alex Kurtzman has, if he's going to be a hands-off, just a nameplate EP, or if he's going to be a hands-on showrunner, and it appears that they're still hiring, whether that writer they're looking for is just writing the pilot, or they're going to be the all-time, you know, the overall showrunner. But they announced for 2017 January, you know, a traditional mid-season, they're going to have to get on the stick here and get the concept in the Bible fleshed out and get on with it. But no ideas. It's wide open. It's wide open. And the point about format, if this one, we don't even know what the order is. Is it going to be 8, 10, 12, 20?
Episodes,
and,
yeah.
And if, right. And if they go to, an American Horror Story, an ARC anthology, the last 10, 20 years, people have said, you know, why not do a Klingon series? Why not do, you can do different points in time. With CG and a lot of digital imaging, maybe you don't have to spend your bucks on sets. You can you can hop around and have limited time without getting too invested in the overhead. And people would love to see that kind of a situation. Or the what your caller just said is another thing, reflecting current times. So you've got a core cast and all that. The great thing about Star Trek, which sets it apart from all of these, again, is that the sandbox is so huge. You can go to different time periods. You can go to the different alien cultures. It's just such a rich background. That's part of what makes it so appealing here.
Let's go to Jim in Palm City, Florida. Jim, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I'm watching the original Star Trek episodes now on Netflix for the first time since I was a kid in the early 70s. And what strikes me this time around is the leadership skills of Captain Kirk. And Kirk, he gets data from his staff. He cuts it off. And he makes a clear decision that everyone has to roll with. And Shatner just shines in that role. So Captain Picard, for example, is also decisive, but he's very different. His leadership is played with the grandiose aura, right? And Kirk is pragmatic. He's very American, and he's that American leader from the 1960s whose leadership had genuine morality, idealism, and probably a decisiveness that was earned in the World War II battlefields.
Jim, we're all swooning here with your leadership analysis, and who knows what it will be this next time out. Let me hold that and get one more, if I may. I appreciate your call, Jim. Andy in Boston. Andy, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm looking forward to Star Trek being, you know, what it is. It's allegory, but it is one of the only shows that's about hope.
and they're not fleeing the Cylons. The world isn't flooded by zombies. We've made it through the other side, and maybe in the 24th century we'll have cured baldness and found a good toupee. That's my other comment.
Hope springs eternal, Andy. Larry, how about it? Leadership lessons next time out? I mean, and what about the hope? It got dark sometimes, Deep Space Nine and all the rest. Can you feel in the culture what they're going to need to do to make this the appealing thing to also bring the viewers onto their streaming channel?
Well, I think if you've got the cream of the crop of writers, whether you have some veterans back or you have whatever, Star Trek can't help but reflect the social mores for the allegories and also reflect the technical. The great thing about going from the original series to Next Generation, even though people scream that it took 20 years, was that you had that natural 20-year gap in between the television technology and the society you were reflecting. It was easy. It just like lay back and let it happen once you get the formula refixed. And they did, you know, eventually catch lightning in a bottle again. And it's only been 10 years. It seems like an eternity to a lot of us. But the world has changed so fast, and there are so many issues and things to explore, much less the storytelling format, that I don't think they'll have any problem.
And that just one of the comebacks on the way. Margaret, is it appealing to you to be writing for super fans, or they're like, oh, no. You know, they've all got their opinions set in advance. I can't deal with all these super fans.
Oh, I guess I just try to think about writing as saying what I think and not worry too much about the mm-hmm. sort of blowback that could arise. That here lies heartbreak. That's no way to approach writing, especially on the internet.
The principled Margaret. Maybe you'll be on the bridge in the new Star Trek, Margaret. Margaret Lyons, TV columnist at Vulture. It's always great to have you. Thank you for joining us today, Margaret.
It was my pleasure.
Alan Sepinwall at HitFix. Alan, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
And Larry Nemechek, all about Star Trek. Star Trek Magazine, founder of Portal47.net, Trekland blog. Find him there. Larry, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
We'll go out with the X-Files theme song, written by Mark Snow for the series that ran from 93 to 02 back in January. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.